Hey, Mark.
So are we missing our fearless leader and and is Beth not here as well, or?
Not sure, Doug. Yeah. Kendra, do you know whether you've gotten any notifications from Tim and Beth? I think I'm going to guess, Doug, maybe she's out checking on that right now since I don't see her on the screen.
Oh, that sounds good. I thought I was late. Yeah, we had the, we're doing the Munger adoption here, you know, so we have a cow that lost her calf. And so the Munger adoption program is in full swing here at the ranch this morning and last night. It's a little bit of a rodeo, but yeah, hey, you know, it's all for the good. I don't think they would do that, allow me to do that in humans, but it's all good.
So Doug, I'm curious, you know, we always love when we're driving and we see those beautiful fields with the cows. Is there these cows that are, we call them the babysitter cows, that they've got, like, there seems to be, they'll watch five or six and give everybody a little bit of a break.
So yeah, they do that as a herd. Yeah, actually they'll do that. So, I mean, they'll have one cow probably stick around and babysit, and then the rest of them all go to pasture and come back and feed their calves when they get back. And so it works out that way.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We pointed that out to the kids. They love looking for that. There's the babysitter mom right there.
Yeah.
Woo. Doug, I'm looking at these pictures of this motor grader that got caught up in its axle with trying to grade this road. Ray sent some pictures. I think you guys got copied, but it's, wow, it's some pretty deep conditions. County Road 129.
Got stuck?
Yeah, right. I mean, right up to the hubs.
Oh, wow. So that's a bad deal. So yeah, 129 probably, it's over the road that goes over to up over the top of to Wyoming. So
right.
129 would be. Yeah. So yeah, that's not good. You know, those bigger pieces of equipment, they're harder to get stuck. But you know, as when you do get them stuck, it's a bad day.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. Day. Yeah, you bet. Yeah. It's not like just getting out a chain and a come along. Yeah, it's a little more than that. Kendra, do you know whether or not we've heard from Beth and Tim as far as their attendance this morning?
I haven't heard anything, but they're not attending.
Okay. Deanna, how about you? Have you heard anything about maybe either a delay or another meeting or a conflict?
I've not heard anything.
Okay, thanks, Deanna.
Yeah, that's some ugly getting stuck there, Mark. That's some ugly getting stuck.
Yeah,
holy smokes.
As you look at it, Doug, it looks like one of the ladder shots, pictures, it looks like it's clear and it's heading down 129. It looks like it just... It shows after it got out of the ditch.
Yep. Yeah, that's some ugly stuff there. Boy, when that stuff does that too, man, it just like, it's like super glue. It just sucks you in and just holds you. And just, oh my God, that's just ugly.
Well, they were talking about this morning that there's a polar vortex that's now dropping down and going to hit the eastern part of the country up in the northeast, and there's a chance they're going to get snow back there. So that'll be a little wake-up call for those people, and they better keep an eye on their trees and their limbs and everything that's already budded out.
Strange here. So, you know, even over in Grand Junction, you know, they lost 95% of their peach crop, you know, so that frost they had, you know, 23 degrees and, you know, March 10th or something, March 15th or something like that. And yeah, just totally devastating to those guys there too. So, yeah.
You hate to see that. You absolutely hate to see that.
Yeah. It's bad enough living with this COVID stuff when you get add on Mother Nature to get you down.
It does. It adds, you know, it adds just to the layers of bad luck, doesn't it?
Hey, Mark and Doug, I don't know if you saw my note, is I have to jump off at 11 for my son. So if you guys, if we don't get to the document, just let me know if you approve it or not. And then I want to put a press release out. So I'm going to, you know, probably make some quotes from the three of you of the phases and how, you know, we want to support business, yada, yada. And then I'll send it to you, you know, probably early, you know, probably about an hour after the meeting.
Sounds good.
That sounds good.
Yeah, Robin, thank you.
So, Robin, there's a signing at the high school with those students that are going to go on and sign some D1, D3 athletic scholarships then. That sounds terrific.
Yeah, there's only about 10. So my son's doing alpine skiing. There's one other for alpine skiing. And typically in Steamboat, we have a kind of a mix of lacrosse, soccer, alpine skiing, and Nordic skiing is usually the sports that we sign. Yeah. We're not big enough to, and sometimes track. The track is the other one. As Doug probably knows better than me, our football and our basketball and our baseball are just, because our season's so short, very hard for us to compete with the front range on those.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that, and I'll tell you, you know, it used to be back in the old day, well, you had your good athletes in those kind of sports. Well, now there's so many sports, and just like you said, Robin, I mean, so, you know, back when I was a kid, we didn't have skiing, you know, especially competitive school skiing and the rest. So, you know, they're just, and now they're like, there's, you know, soccer and all those other things that you can do. So us being competitive and really stepping up to that other level has been pretty hard for the last probably, you know, 20 years, probably, I would say.
Yeah. A lot more, and as you well know, Doug, too, and we both saw this going through school, a lot more specialization. So you've got athletes that will say, well, I'm just going to do baseball or I'm just going to do hockey. And you used to have those multi-sport athletes, but sometimes they don't anymore. They specialize.
Absolutely. Yep. Totally right. And good for them too. You know, you have to do that now with the way the competitive sports are. I mean, you don't just waltz into these things, even be the best athlete in the world. You're not going to be able to compete with the people that do it, you know, 10 months out of the year. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. When I've watched these athletes, I am so impressed. My son and his cohort, he's a skier, is just, it's pretty much all year round, and the discipline they have to have is incredible. I don't think I would have been able to do that myself.
Well, that and the commitment, yeah, to year round. It's like, okay, kind of over that for a while, baby. Like, yeah, that's a pretty hard thing to be committed to that for, you know, 10, 12 months out of the year, man, I think. So.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I lost all track of time. I was on a lengthy phone call with a less than happy constituent. So
I think Commissioner Corrigan, I think the conservative coalition is out lobbying today and yesterday and this morning.
So during this phone call, I was, and maybe I'm just a little bit behind on my email, that apparently there's been another letter from the Steamboat Institute. Is that true? I still haven't seen it. Have you?
So, no, I haven't seen that either, but we're getting, so I got my call from, you know, and it's right, justly so. So you got the one from Del Lockhart. We all three got one of those, and then, you know, and then we got one. I got a call from Amy Williams as well, and discussing some things. And so yeah, so I think they're. I don't know. I don't know what they're afraid of or concerned of, because we haven't said that we were going to go with any more restrictive than the governor's orders. I guess we just kept that out there as an option at some point in time, but. We're a long ways away from, personally, in my opinion, a long ways away from doing something like that. But anyhow.
As the conversation I was having, the gentleman was just that. But, of course, we've struggled, I think, with the communication effort in terms of making sure that folks understand that we really aren't doing anything more restrictive than the governor, other than the short-term lodging ban and the and the mask wearing. And I think the guy that I was talking to actually made some pretty good points to me, which was, and he was pretty well-informed guy. He made some comments about some of our communication effort. In particular, he talked about the letter that we wrote about the short-term, or I'm sorry, the second homeowners. And maybe we, I kind of agree that maybe we whiffed there just a little bit in terms of we were, my thought was when we wrote that letter, it was actually an effort to soften our position on second homeowners and make it be so that they could feel more comfortable returning to our community. And that may not be how that message got received. Maybe we could have done a better job with that. I don't disagree with that. When you go back and read that letter, it still feels a little bit harsh in terms of it could be received as telling second homeowners to stay away. And I'm not really sure that that was our intent.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I'm here.
I was late, too. I was on the phone. I just got on here a minute ago. So.
Great. Well, I'm going to disagree with what you just said. I think we were attempting to tell people they still shouldn't come. But we were, what we were, I don't know what, you know, what exactly what your, what the concern is, but we were intending to tell people that they still was not a good time for them to come. And also add in some, but if you do come, here's what you should do. So I don't.
I mean, that was a different message than what originally existed, which is, do not come here, no how, no way. And so it did kind of soften things to the point of saying, well, we think it would be better if you didn't come, but if you're going to come, then observe these protocols, please. So, I don't know.
Commissioners, one, Mark and I talked about this yesterday, and one of the things that I think it was Gunnison County did was send a postcard. So, you know, if the lodging order, you know, if we stick with the date at the end of May and it gets lifted and we're opening up in June, what might be a great idea is to send another letter to the second home owners and just to kind of say, you know, thank you so much for helping us out and keeping our community safe. And now we're in the stage of allowing people to come back to our county. And these are some of the precautions we'd like you to take, you know, something a little bit more welcoming. And we could probably do that, you know, towards the end of the month if we're in the same
stage. So Tim and I were both on this call yesterday with a bunch of other commissioners talking about tourism. And there was a list of things I wanted to share with you guys from that. So if we're ready, we can dive into that because it relates exactly to what you said, Robin.
Yeah, you know what, Beth, I think that's a good idea, actually, because I think that there's safety in numbers, and I think that to the extent that we are staying in harmony with our fellow resort county commissioners and counties, that feels like a generally a good place to be. You can go ahead and get started. I've got to go use the bathroom. I'll be right back.
No problem. So there were a few things that, so this was really all of the kind of resort rural counties. So, you know, San Miguel, which is where Telluride is, La Plata, which is where Durango is, Summit County, Eagle County, Ouray, Grand County. So we were just shared ideas about what everyone's doing and how they're thinking about tourism and transition. And so a few things that came out of that. One is that almost everybody is doing this kind of industry sector, stakeholder group, planning type of thing like Gunnison is doing. And actually, I just got off the phone. I was talking to Kara about what, you know, how that might look to do that here. But almost everyone is doing that, some form of that. In terms of asking the industries to identify what safe reopening looks like for their industry and what kind of protocols they can agree on and put in place. And I think there's a lot of value to that. I think it would help our businesses really feel like we're hearing them, but then it would also provide some assurance to us that there was safe reopening happening, and being able to do that on a sector by, you know, an industry by industry way, rather than having to look at each individual business and what they're doing. So I hope we can talk more about that. Everyone really said that the primary thing that's probably going to control tourism for them this summer is the fact that events are being canceled. And Tim, you were on this call too, so if you want to mention anything, let me know.
I took a long list of notes, but keep going.
Okay. And, you know, places that have music festivals and that really events have pretty much across the board been canceled in most cases, and that's really what's going to help control tourism. Everyone has still this question mark about weddings, which as we all know is a question mark here too. Places that have areas of kind of high numbers of visitation, they're looking at potentially keeping those closed. So like Quandary Peak, the Maroon Bells. I don't know if we really have any place that I would put in those same kind of categories, but I just thought it was interesting that was something they were looking at, just because those create such high numbers of visitors and then crowds, especially big crowds. And then related to what you just said, Robin, everyone seemed in agreement, and I hadn't really thought about this, but it makes sense, that they would start, you know, once they're ready to do some reopening, that they would start by marketing to second homeowners, encouraging second homeowners to come, because there's a feeling that those folks, they feel like they're a part of the community. They have a house where they can stay, you know, where they're not out as all the time with everybody else. They obviously are here to be out, but they're spending a lot of their time in their home. They are probably more likely to follow the rules, again, because they feel like they're part of the community. But they come and they spend money, and so it can help to support the economy in some way, kind of prior to marketing to other people, you know, tourists who might come. And it seemed like almost everyone was planning to use that kind of a strategy to start by encouraging second homeowners to come back and then moving to a broader kind of tourism type of message. They did say that everyone that has started down the road of these kind of business sector, industry sector reopening plans emphasized that it was really important to include a public health or a county person on those committees, because otherwise they found, how did Jeannie McQueenie put it, that the industries were being a little too creative in trying to interpret the rules, and that it started to look like kind of looking for loopholes, and that in order for it to really be productive, it worked best to have someone representing the county as a part of those groups. The only other thing I wrote down, I don't remember who said this now. I wrote it down. It doesn't really matter who said it, but one county indicated they're also really pushing businesses in these industry sectors to talk about what does it look like to shut down again, not in kind of a threat way, but more of like, what if one of your employees is sick? What if you need to do a 72-hour closure? how are you preparing to be able to control an outbreak if it were to happen? And that they even had been talking about that kind of from the financial planning side, like how do you plan your budget considering the possibility that you might need to have a 72-hour shutdown in order to help control an outbreak, for example. And then just one other small thing, which this would be something to share with the city, in Breckenridge, and I think one of the other towns in Summit County, they're looking at making some of their street, their downtown streets, pedestrian only, kind of as an experiment, because, and it's something that people there have been wanting to try and do for a while, but they find that there's a lot of crowding on sidewalks in the summer, and so they're looking at some of their streets being pedestrian only, to try to help control some of that crowding, which I thought was interesting. Give a little more space for restaurants to allow social distancing and give a little more space to pedestrians who are walking around. Those were the things I wrote down that I thought were helpful. Tim, what else did you have?
So there's a couple of counties that have some more specific plans about opening up. So I'm looking at Ouray. Ouray is, they've got a short-term lodging prohibition like we do, but they're planning on lifting that on May 15th. And I think that they were talking about a 50% capacity guideline. I didn't write that down, but that's kind of what I remember. Grand County is planning to submit a variance request on May 12th for restaurants to open on May 15th. I think generally the takeaway that I took away from the conversation is that pretty much all of the resort counties are definitely moving towards a pretty significant reopening of their economies no later than the end of the month. I think that if I was going to be self-critical, which I can be at times, would be perhaps I've been relying too much upon following the governor's lead, and maybe that's not such a great idea. Maybe we should be crafting a more route county specific plan. And that's not that we haven't. I mean, we talked about that yesterday. We're developing criteria, but I think our business owners, as you can see from some of the communications we're getting, are getting extremely anxious. And I guess my concern would be is that by relying upon the governor to provide guidelines moving forward, that we may end up in a rough spot like we did the last time, where he issues some kind of an executive order that doesn't have enough specificity to it, and that we end up scrambling for a week or two to figure out what we really need to do locally. And listening to the two restaurant owners that I talked to today is that that's not really gonna work for them to wake up on the 27th of May and find out what the new set of rules are, that they'd like a little bit more certainty to know what the world is going to look like on the 27th. Frankly, they'd like us to apply for the exemption and let them go back to work right now. But they sure don't want to wait until the 27th and then find out that they still need to wait a couple of weeks.
So this great conversation here. So especially the talk about the exemption and, you know, and I guess my calls have been the fear that we're going to implement something worse than the governor's situation. And you know, basically, and we have to start being the judge here of these criteria and the rest. I mean, yeah, it's great that this policy committee is going to come up with some of these criteria and the rest, but we still have to be the judge of that. And so again, my comments have been more in the fact that, and I said, well, we've had to keep that option open just because it could be and would be, but I don't think so. Where do we get to be this, in this you know, when do we start actually making decisions to start doing some of that opening? And I've said in the last week, you know, that I think our internal herd is more than adequately safe myself, and I don't know how we can justify the fact that it isn't. Opening it up has been my fear to the outside tourism industry, you know, and again, you know, back to the lodging letter, I was pretty concerned about the wording that we had in the lodging letter, you know, second homeowner letter, that, you know, because I just remember the conversation we had with our attorney saying, well, you can't keep them from coming here. So, you know, and again, that's why I wanted to make sure we had some language in there that said, well, you know, if you do come here, you know, do things right and, you know, quarantine and self-quarantine. So, so where do we go? So, you know, we can start making some moves, you know, especially on the second homeowner stuff.
I feel like, to me, a few things are pretty important here. One is that we haven't been under safer at home with this reopening for a significant period of time to judge the impact yet. So we shouldn't get out ahead of our horse here, but we should be making plans for what happens next. And I think, you know, the thing I would remind us is that we are currently under the state's order. I mean, other than our lodging ban, we are following the state's order. And so if we believe there's justification for more reopening than that, that's going to be putting together an exemption application to the state, waiting for that to be reviewed and approved. And my opinion is, quite frankly, by the time we got to that, we'll probably be on the next stage of the state reopening anyway. And I don't know if we really have any information that would justify us moving in that direction. I am supportive of this gradual reopening concept. And so I'm not thinking, let's figure out how we can open things faster, but let's make sure we're thinking and planning ahead for what is going to happen next. So that's where I'm at in this conversation about tourism and second homeowners and restaurants and other businesses, is we need to just make sure that we're, to Tim's point, not just waiting around for the governor to tell us what's going to happen, but really engaging with our local business owners, engaging with the people locally to come up with a local plan. And in the end, that plan may not be significantly different from the governor's plan, but at least we've done our local work with the people who we impact, right? And so to me, that's where this conversation about these different aspects related to tourism comes in, is let's engage with our businesses that we know are not going to fully recover until tourism fully recovers. Let's work in partnership with them to figure out what we want to happen here. And I do think there's some value in gathering information about what similar counties are doing, other counties that are reliant on tourism the way that we are. And so that's why I'm bringing you these examples. But my thought is we really should engage locally on what the next steps look like for us. And that's where my mind is at. Not let's try to move as fast as we can. I think it's important that we recognize the importance of reopening tourism in a safe way. And what does that look like? Because our economy is not going to survive without it. And so it's thinking about what it looks like to move forward and engaging with the people who really are experts in their own industry. So that's what I'm thinking about.
So let me speak to that. I think some of the complaints that I've been hearing are based upon the apparent message that we have been sending up until now. So what I'm hearing is that, gosh, Rauch County, here we can look to your neighbor in Eagle County that has 550 positive tests, and yet they got an exemption from the governor, and they're working towards moving forward and getting their economy running again. And here you are, little old Rauch County, that's only got 62 or 63 cases and a very low level of new incidences of positive cases. And yet it appears that you're being so much more conservative and restrictive. And oh, by the way, we restaurant owners, if we can't get open and up and running for June and July and August, we're going to be broke, we're going to be out of business, and there's going to be a whole lot of people hurt by that. So, you know, why do you, Rauch County, feel the need to send such a strong message that you don't want people coming to your county?
Can I ask a question, Tim? I missed the beginning of the conversation you guys had, and I'm just getting to my email and I'm seeing there's so many people that are like, hey, allow the state's orders to stand for Rauch County. And I guess I'm really baffled because we are, other than lodging, we are. And so something is missing in the message, I think. Well, and I don't know where Robin went, but
no, that's exactly the point.
Is it the article that came out? I mean, it has to be, right? That has to be what prompted these emails.
You know, I have no idea about any of that.
But that's that and the letter, they didn't like the letter.
Which letter?
They didn't like the letter to the second homeowners.
Who didn't? I mean, who read it? And I guess I don't understand who these people are.
Well, so hold on, Beth.
They're all the Republicans.
So somebody started circulating that letter? Is that what they're I guess I just don't understand.
Yeah, that's what started this thing. Yeah, so, yep.
Okay.
So let me finish up before we go there. I think that there's two tracks here, Beth. And along the track of what you describe as the Rauch County Board of Health, the Board of County Commissioners, consider what regulatory action we may or may not take, everything that you say makes perfect sense. But there needs to be a parallel track where we are able to communicate to our citizens, to our constituents, that in fact we share many of their desire to see the economy reopen and be able to bring the economy back to life and to be able to see restaurants open up. And by the way, we're going to do that in the safest possible way. But the end game really is that come June 1st, at the risk of jumping to a conclusion, is that come June 1st, there's going to be lodging facilities that in all likelihood we're going to see opening up, and there's going to be restaurant activity that in all likelihood we're going to see opening up. But that we are going to be pointing in that direction, and we're hoping that the governor is also pointed in the same direction. But if for some reason he's not, we are going to be able to make independent decisions for Rauch County based upon Rauch County data and based upon what we think is best for the community.
So I'm, like I said, I'm just getting to these emails. I actually don't, I don't know if you guys, I mean, we're all getting these same emails. These are in response to the article that came out this morning / last night about our transition plan. I mean, there's people saying they don't like phase 3, please rescind your public health orders. And maybe it is specific to tourism and visitors, but I think we just need to talk with Robin a little bit about messaging, because it's just very confusing to me. People don't realize that there's, I don't know. I mean, they'll sort of move on, I think, in the next couple of days, but something about the tone of that article did not send the message we were looking for, apparently. So I guess I'm not sure what got lost in translation there.
So actually, you know, I've read very few of these emails, because I was on the phone for so long. Regardless of all these emails, regardless of the newspaper article, regardless of all the people that are riled up, I'm still focused, especially after the conversation we had with our fellow commissioners yesterday. I'm still focused on what the reality of June 1st is going to look like. And I'm personally becoming increasingly persuaded that it's probably time for us to move in that general direction of reopening the economy come June 1st, and then looking at what happens. It's a risk, I get that.
So Tim, by reopening the economy, what do you mean?
I mean things along the lines of a 50% allowance for lodging occupancy and some way for our restaurants to be able to begin doing in-person seating and dining.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think we have to move, as we heard on this call from our fellow commissioners in other counties the other day, we do have to think about what safely reopening tourism looks like, and we need to start planning for that. And so I was late because I was chatting with Kara about this because she's putting together a proposal for us, and I see she's here. So I don't know if you guys would like to hear what she's thinking about. She was going to put it all in writing for us. Doug, I know you want to make a comment, but maybe we can
hear
Kara about her thoughts on how to help with that.
No, I want to hear from Doug first.
So I'm great to hear from Kara. So, but I think, you know, there's an opportunity for us to look for some type of an exemption, even if it's 3-week exemption for the local herd, you know, so we don't have lodging coming in. If we ask for some type of a local exemption for some of those businesses to open at different rates or whatever, including the restaurant business, only providing meals to the local people, before we have the tourism and the nightly rentals coming back into town. I mean, I don't see the risk there myself. So I'm just saying, you know, that would be a little look like and say, hey, we're actually interested in making sure the businesses have a place to go, even if it's only going to be supplied by local people doing business there. So I'll turn it over to Kara.
Well, no, chairman's prerogative. I get one more comment. Whatever comes out of the conversation today and over the next couple of days, for whatever reason, the message that is being received by our business community, I don't believe is the message that we really have wanted to send. What I'm getting is that the message that is being received is that Rock County has taken it upon themselves to be more restrictive than our neighbors and our compatriots. And I don't believe that that's the message that we want to send. I think we want to send the message that, yes, we are anxious to see businesses get reopened, to have the opportunity to get going, and we just want to try to do it in the safest way possible.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, Tim. And I would all, I mean, we can talk about the exemption process. I'll just reiterate what we've talked about before, which is when we've reviewed those exemptions from some of these other counties, they're not actually ending up doing anything less restrictive than the state. And so while it may sound nice, like we're doing something less restrictive, when you read the details, they're really not. And we have not been able to get those counties to describe to us what they believe they're doing that the state that's less restrictive than the state. So
But the message is important.
I think there's a message piece. I think there's a conversation to be had. The exemption route to me is just a lot of paper pushing that doesn't actually change the circumstance, in my opinion.
Other than it makes our business community feel like we are working hard to support them. And there is the chance, Beth, I actually agree with virtually everything that you just said, other than there is the possibility that come the end of the month, the governor will not be lifting restrictions because of issues on the Front Range, because of issues in Weld County, because of issues in other places. And we may be, given our statistics, in a place where we really are ready to move forward legitimately and in a safe way. And I wouldn't want to spend the first 2 weeks of June trying to work on that exemption.
So I just want to really, let's not get ahead of ourselves on any of this. I think what we should, my opinion, and I'd like to hear what Kara thinks, but I think we should focus our attention on planning for June 1st. And if through that planning, to address exactly what you just said, Tim, but if through that planning, there's some obvious need to request some exemptions, I think we should look at that. But I would propose that we really focus our efforts on planning for June 1st, and whether that's ends up being in line with the governor, or we have to request an exception at that point, or whatever, I think we should focus on planning for what tourism looks like this summer, how business reopening progresses, and we need a local plan for that. And I would just imagine that Eric is probably pulling his hair out hearing us talk about a local exception without our public health officials here to discuss that, because they have to sign off on it. And we should absolutely not be considering anything like that without them being part of the conversation.
And you know what? We're not here considering that at the moment. We're just talking about the potential eventuality. And I'm not at all proposing that we move forward with a local exemption now, but that we keep that option open in the future, obviously depending upon the input from our public health officials.
So right now, restaurants aren't acceptable at period, right? With the governor's order?
Takeout only.
Curbside delivery. So I actually am lobbying a little bit for some potential opening up of those restaurants, potentially now that we still have the lodging ban on and that we're serving local people. So I'm just throwing that out. I don't know why we're not. I think the local herd, the numbers have not panned out here at all. I mean, so we got five deaths and they're all in Casey's Pond. So, you know, and we got all of these instances of positive cases, and yet, you know, we don't have any. I don't even know that the hospital's got any COVID-19 patients in there right now. So I guess I'm still talking about our local herd and what we're advocating for and allowing some of those to open back up with and social distancing and the rest, and utilizing the mitigation protocol that we could have, and asking, that's what, you know, and again, that's what the other counties are doing that we're not doing. So I'll just throw that out there yet too.
Well, I think this has been a great conversation, and I wish that you and Beth would actually express your feelings instead of keeping everything bottled up inside.
I'm just going to ask us to maybe take a breath on this. You know, we talked about a transition plan yesterday. We expressed that we were on board with that transition plan. That was in consultation with public health. Kara has been involved representing the business community in that conversation about the transition plan. In response to a newspaper article, we got a long list of frustrated emails, which is not surprising. And I think we should just take a breath and sit on this and think about what our next steps are. I am open to options. I think we should absolutely be identifying the safest way that we can most quickly move forward with economic recovery options. There's no question about that. But I also want to I know we all feel a little bit of just when we get pushed from the community, and it's appropriate to feel that, but it's also appropriate to kind of let it settle for a day before we would go forward with any change of course, just because we got a dozen emails from people who didn't like what they read in the newspaper.
So again, going back to what I talked about, there's two tracks here. Again, I don't disagree with what you say, Beth, about before we actually take action and go after an exemption. But I do think there is a need for us to communicate our desire to see the economy to start moving forward. And I somehow we've missed the mark on that. So, and I'm sure Kara would love to tell us about how we've missed the mark or not, as the case may be. Kara, please.
Hi, thanks for letting me join and chime in. I think that there has been a little bit of, the focus has been on public health, and that's, I think, you know, that's where the conversation has been around. And I know that in different meetings, we've been discussing what does this look like for the economy? How can we help support businesses? But it just hasn't been forefront of the conversation and the messaging. And I think that I can work with you guys to help address that. Certainly it has to be what you guys believe to be true. A few things that I've heard recently, and I, again, just was chatting with Beth about it, but I'll relay here that, you know, questions around this transition plan, and I've already gotten calls about whether or not this is like set in stone and nothing is changing. And you guys talked about that yesterday in the meeting, that this is a guideline, and but it's, I mean, there's various degrees of all of those elements. There already have been, there will be moving forward. So just making sure that that's communicated clearly, that it is not an absolute, it is a guideline, just that. And then, as you guys have also mentioned, just, you know, acknowledging, we put more on the forefront that the business, the impact to business is on the minds of all of you. I know that it has been, but just maybe hasn't been as public of a message. Noting this conversation, I think, you know, if everybody could hear the excitement and push that you guys have to help support businesses, that would be amazing. Just take a snapshot of today and pass that around. And then figuring out the way for people to say that they, or not say, but know that decisions aren't being made without them having any clue or idea or input. And that's where following up on Commissioner Milton's comment about these industry sector groups. You know, we have the Lodging Association, they've been in place, so that was fairly straightforward, and they were a big piece of this puzzle in terms of shutting things down, but also have been and will continue to be part of things ramping back up. And they are working right now to bring to all of you a recommendation for mitigation protocol that's specific to that industry. And then also, the request of how does this phase in look like, and having a proposal to all of you sooner rather than later. Beth and I met with restaurant owners just yesterday and are, you know, bringing them together to try to have similar conversation. What makes sense? What doesn't make sense? Let's get the people who run these businesses to put together proposals for all of you to digest, and the public health officials to review. But it doesn't make sense from my perspective to not have them weigh in, because if you say that people need to be, there could be just mitigation protocol that doesn't make sense for them to even open. So from there, and Beth has shared some examples, specifically from Gunnison, on doing that at a further level. I have identified what I think 12 industries, including lodging and restaurants, that it would be great to have them pull together more cohesively, have regular meetings and regular communication about what is working, what isn't working. Your team does a fantastic job communicating with the construction industry. So how do we just keep that going? There's a lot of things that are already in place, but then there's you know, areas that aren't. Guides and outfitters, we don't have, they didn't fall into one of those main categories. So how are we making sure that they know what they can and cannot do? And if they can be functioning, we should certainly let them know so that they can try to get back to business and have some revenue coming into their streams. So that's kind of a proposal that I was thinking. And then Doug, I know, I don't know what the direction was that you went for the, or want to go with the policy committee, but I was thinking that that maybe becomes like the chair of each of those industries gets together and shares with the elected officials kind of where things are at, what are the recommendations and proposals for moving forward.
Thank you, Kara.
Thanks, Kara. So the policy committee, I just want to make sure that we get, you know, some more voices in there as well. And again, I'm totally good with that. And again, I've voiced concern of making recommendations to myself, which is totally crazy. So anyhow, to put it nicely. So, but anyhow, I want to hear, but, you know, and again, you're right. You know, we fell into this well, you know, with the well being the COVID-19, and we fell into the bottom of it, and we've been clawing our way out of it. My analogy is that we've been clawing our way out of this well of COVID-19, and every step that we try to take has got nails on it, you know? So every handhold or whatever trying to get out of the well has nails on it. So I just wanted, and again, Beth, you know, back to your comment, I do think that there's some opportunity for us to make up a local exemption right now to advocate for some of our businesses. And I think that's what Tim's saying as well. And, you know, just some of those people that aren't allowed to do anything right now with all our local herd orientation as well. And when you talk about phasing, I'm totally into the phasing. In fact, I've been preaching on phasing as well, but what more better vehicle of phasing would be to allow the second homeowners back in, and or we're not allowing them out anyhow in the first place. But, you know, again, if we were to send out a second letter to, you know, and you know, we don't need to invite them. And I don't know, I sometimes think the best action is just keeping my mouth shut sometimes too. So I'm all good with that too. But, you know, so we never had a chance. I thought our letter to the second homeowners was a little heavy on the asking them not to come. But anyhow, I don't know. We got to figure out. But I'm with Tim a little bit too in the fact that we got to be looking like, and whether it's just a lookalike that we're watching out for our fellow businessmen and the rest out there. The confusion in here is totally. And I'm thank goodness that the policy team and Robin were allowed to separate out the governor's order in that task sheet, to separate out the governor's part of the order and what the Route County is ordering. Because otherwise it looked like that Route County was doing all that stuff, and we didn't, we've only got like two little things that we're doing right now. So anyhow.
What I'm hearing, I think, hi, Robin, I'm so glad you're back because we really need you. Robin, I just sent you an email where I copied and pasted a bunch of the feedback we got today, because I think the primary thing we're facing here is not so much a public health issue or an economic issue, it's a messaging issue. I think that people read the article this morning and had some really, first of all, they seem to believe that we are being more restrictive than the state. And maybe they're just talking about lodging, which is where we are being more restrictive. But I don't think so, just on my read of those emails. So I think something about the way the article was written made people think that we were being significantly more restrictive than the state, or that we were considering being significantly more restrictive than the state moving forward. So I don't know what kind of messaging needs to go out, but we are not, I don't think we are A, doing that now, or B, planning on doing that going forward. So that to me is just, people got the wrong message. about what we are doing and what our intent is. So I don't know if it's something about how the article was written or what. Anyway, it sounds like there's a little cleanup needed on that. And then I think Kara is relaying a message that I've heard. I heard this from restaurants yesterday, and we've heard this via the chamber and some other things, that business owners do not feel like they are having input into our conversations, and they're not feeling heard. And so we need to be proactive in how we address that, because I really do believe that I understand the perspective of the business owners and it's being considered, but it's a problem that they don't feel that way. That's a problem. And so we do need to make sure that we are hearing them. And I think that the conversation about the industry sector plans is probably the best way to do that. And then I guess I would just say, to Doug's point about an exemption request, I think I'm less inclined to head that direction than you are, and I've talked about why. It's not so much that I'm worried about it as that I see it as more of kind of a lip service / political move, and I'm just not so inclined to do that. But I would say that if through the, I said this to Kara this morning, I'm not clear on whether the restaurants are requesting that or not. And if they are, that has not been made clear to me. And I was in a meeting with the restaurant owners yesterday. And so without a clear request from them to reopen earlier than the end of May, I wouldn't head that direction. But if they want to make that request, I think we should listen to it. You know, I don't think we should guarantee whether we would do it or not without input from public health and seeing what the mitigation plan they would propose would look like. But I absolutely want to hear from them if that's what they're requesting. That has not been made clear to me if that is their request.
Okay. If you formalize those groups, that'll be a great avenue to get a lot of input, rather than, you know, you guys and myself included are getting so many individual pieces of input, but have those individual sectors come together and bring to the table kind of an agreement on what they want to see happen.
So may I ask for, I wanted to ask this before, we know the different sectors that are kind of self-organized, like the Lodging Association, then I don't know if there's a restaurant association, you know, Kara and the commissioners, what would be the other main sectors? If we can identify that, I would have some recommendations for everybody, but can you tell me what the others might be? Retail, I'm assuming.
I thought Gunnison had a good, I don't know, their list was pretty good. Kara, have you given thought to what those sectors might be?
Mm-hmm. I think pretty much in line with the Gunnison, the ones that I wanted to add in there, they have manufacturing, but I think just being a little bit more specific here, to, outdoor recreation manufacturing, that makes more sense. And then I can't remember if they have it or not, but gyms and like health clubs, I don't think that they had that specifically in there. Anyway, I have a 12 sectors that I think need to be pulled together, and happy to talk about it in detail here or offline, whatever you guys prefer.
I don't want to talk about 12 sectors right now.
Well, I think, Kara, you were planning to really put together kind of a formal proposal to us about what this might look like. And This just obviously came in front of us first. One other question I have for us, and maybe Robin, you could weigh in as well. So obviously the paper reported on what we discussed yesterday in terms of that transition plan. I know the plan is to get the kind of final document today, but we also know that it may change, right? It's not set in stone. And I think we want to make that message clear. I'm wondering if, it would be good to kind of frame this as a comment period, where we put out the document that Robin sent us this morning, but then we specifically are getting input from the community on that plan, because all people are commenting on or sharing input on is the, is the story in the paper, not the actual information that we put out. Jeannie McQueenie actually made a really good comment the other day when I, commissioner from Eagle County, you know, she talked about how our residents, our citizens, our constituents are kind of in a bell curve, and we hear from the people who think we're doing too much and the people who think we're not doing enough, but that most people really are probably in the middle, in reality. And so I guess I would just see some value in the idea of putting that out there and specifically soliciting comments from the general population, not just the people who get worked up about what we put out there, but everybody, and specifically requesting input and comments on this sort of final draft. So curious what your thoughts would be on something like that.
Well, I think I'd be happy to do that. I mean, that's the challenge when we have meetings that are open and even we're still discussing, you know, reporters can report on anything that is discussed in a commissioner meeting. So happy to do that. I would say that the challenge when you ask for public comment, it is very hard when it is qualitative versus quantitative. You get the qualitative, but if you notice, the Steamboat Pilot today put out a survey with 5 different questions of about the public health orders. So I would say if we want public health outcome, public health comment, we should do it with a survey so that we can get more quantitative data as opposed to qualitative data, so that would help you get a better sense of what's going on. That would be one. So Cheryl and I actually had been talking about that before, of what would be information that would be useful for you. And I sent a note to Dr. Harrington and Carrie just listening to the conversation this morning, and sorry I had to drop off, but momentous occasion for my son. Is that I think something that we should consider, I brought it up probably a week or so ago, is that I think from anybody's perspective that lives in a rural county, just like when they look at New York, they'll say, you know, we are not New York, we are not Denver, and granted we're a tourist economy. So some of the comments that both Doug and Tim made, and I didn't hear all of yours, Beth, but before I left, is that perhaps we need to look at this road to recovery that is really the Route County's road to recovery, and get some input from our public health department that there may be some things that we can do earlier than the rest of the state. We should, you know, I think we should get their feedback, but that I don't think we have to have it set in stone that we're only following what the governor does. Because when you think of a macro level is when you do something on the federal level, it doesn't necessarily work for every state. I mean, that's why we have a federalist system. So I think the same holds true for a state. The governor is trying to do something that works for the entire state, and why some counties have asked for exemptions, because it's not the same. And then we are not like every single rural county as well, because we are a tourist destination. So we are less like Moffitt and more like Eagle. So just thinking about, you know, other things, but I think that's something for you all to consider, that we're not just following the governor and we're taking a proactive stance of what works best for Rock County.
So I think that's message that go ahead, Doug. That's an important message. No, and I agree.
No, I agree totally too. And again, I just want us to be visioned that we are open to some type of discussion on some type of exemption. We shouldn't be driving it, but we have Kara on the phone and the rest. So if these business sectors think that they can take care of it, and we already heard that, well, maybe, you know, they're skimping a little bit on this and that and whatever, but they need to be thinking about how they can convince us, the Board of Health, that an exemption is in order and that they can still do our main objective is to keep our community safe and healthy. So, and we shouldn't be driving it. They should be through this. I don't know whether it's a policy committee or each of these, the Lodging Association or the Restaurant Owners Association, and all of these people that aren't getting the needs that they have, that they need to be able to sell, that they have some type of opportunity. But I think it starts from us saying that we would be open to hearing that conversation, and then we would be open if they can portray to us that we continue to be safe, that we would ask the governor on behalf of them to have an exemption on that case. So that's all I'm kind of trying to drive to, is a little bit just openness as well.
So Robin, I think in my opinion, the message that we need out there that maybe wasn't captured well in this article is really that we are being proactive, and we want to be proactive, and we want to do what works for Route County. And I would just remind us, if we're going backwards, we already did that. We made a very calculated decision based on the data of whether we were going to follow the governor's safer at home. And obviously we were, at that point, we were looking more at, do we need to be less restrictive or more restrictive than the governor, or are we ready to move forward? And at that point, we decided we were ready to move forward based on local information, and that it made sense to align with the governor and what is happening on a statewide basis. I don't think that we are committed to the idea that that will always be the right call. You know, there may be points where we need to be more restrictive or less restrictive. And I think we just need to make sure that we have a consistent message that we are making the best decisions for what's happening locally. And so maybe that's the message that just got lost there, is, although I don't think so, because everything we're getting is you should just follow the governor and stop being more restrictive. So I don't know, something was not translated well. It's possible, honestly, that one person or one group of people sent out an email to a whole group of people and said, you need to write to the county commissioners because they're doing A, B, and C, and D, and they portrayed something inaccurately. I mean, that's always possible too.
I actually think that article was pretty accurate of what happened yesterday. And so I think the challenge that you have with anything that, like a public health order or any type of law, people read what they want to interpret. And so, you know, and we can only do so much of how it's reported. So I think the article was actually pretty accurate, but I think, as Doug has said, so many times, you know, people are getting restless. So they're just looking for any opportunity to push the buttons. And, you know, they're realizing that you are the decision makers. So, you know, just like any good lobbying campaign, they're trying to figure out who are the decision makers that we can push the buttons to make some changes. So they're just following.
They're pushing my buttons, Robin.
I know. Well, welcome to elected office.
I know, it's all good. I guess I would just say, I think, and I would ask Tim and Doug to say whether they agree or not, I think we agree on the message that we need to hear from our people who are impacted. We need to hear from our public health people, but we also need to hear from our business owners, and we need to hear from our residents, our constituents that we represent. And we need to make good decisions for Route County. And those may align with what the governor does on a statewide level, and they may not. And sometimes they might align and sometimes they might not align. But the important message, and I think we agree, is that we need to make decisions for our people and our businesses and our public health situation, and that we are committed to doing that.
Tim, what do you think?
He froze. He's probably still talking. But he froze up, so maybe we can let Doug go first.
I'm good. But this is a great conversation. But I just want to make sure that we understand that we need to be portraying that the fact that we are open for discussions and that we would be lobbying for those businesses to and on behalf of us with consultation with public health to ask for some exemptions, and that isn't off of the playbook. That's all. I just want to make sure that we agree that something like that could be possible.
I agree with that.
And then we throw it back in the arms of those businesses through CARA to say, hey, okay, we would lobby for you. Show us how you guys can do this. How can we do that? And then we would lobby for that on behalf of those business owners back to the governors to ask for a two-week exemption or something like that. You know, again, we're talking about all this stuff goes away. And again, to me, it seems like it's a great idea because it does do the phasing, because we still have the short-term rental ban going on that we're looking for. So.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
We can.
Great. So I've got a number of comments to make here. I've been jotting down some notes. The first comment is, on the outside looking in at how this board functions, it may look a little bit disjointed and sound a little bit disjointed, but I actually think this is a really great conversation that we're having. And I appreciate my fellow commissioners speaking their minds and trying to work their way through this. And I think we need to go through this kind of a process. I think if we just carefully construct our questions and thoughts for the benefit of the press, we may not get to where we really need to get to. A lot of what I've got to say here is actually just rhetorical and not even in the form of a question, but things that I think we need to remember. Number one, I would remind our citizens that Rouse County may be a victim of its own success. The way that we responded as a Board of Public Health and the way that our citizens responded to the threat of the coronavirus when it hit was quick and fast and decisive, and it really made a difference in flattening the curve. And I heard Commissioner Childs from Pitkin County say yesterday that they squashed the curve. And I think we came pretty close to that. So a lot of folks are making the comment, why in the world are we being so restrictive when our numbers are so low? Well, our numbers are low because we were restrictive. And it has put us into this position where we have the opportunity to move forward. Frankly, I was always surprised with Eagle County, with the high numbers that they had and the continuing high numbers that they have and the continuing number of cases, positive cases that they have, that they're not receiving more pushback. But I just feel it's important to congratulate our citizens and ourselves for doing the right thing to put us into this position. I think when we talk, and we're talking a lot about the restaurant industry and the lodging industry, because they really are kind of the big, the bigger players when we talk about reopening our economy. I guess I would ask the rhetorical question to kind of piggyback on what Doug has been talking about. If the lodging or the restaurant industry got together and developed a set of mitigation protocols that we believe are adequate, then what is the advantage of waiting 3 or 4 weeks for the governor's new order? If we believe that the numbers justify us moving forward, given the numbers that we have right now, and there are good mitigation protocols in place, I would be open to seeking that exemption. And if individual restaurants don't want to open, that's fine. That's their choice. We're not telling them that they have to. But I think that if we could move towards allowing them to operate in a responsible way, even before the governor does, I think that that's appropriate for us to move in that direction. And so I guess I would throw it back to Kara. How quickly do you think the restaurant industry could come up with the mitigation protocols and the lodging industry as well?
I think next week. I know there's already a draft for the restaurant from the restaurant group, so we have something to work from. And then the Lodging Association already has a subcommittee that's meeting on Friday, but they started talking around high level what would work. And then the American Hotel and Lodging Association has come out with recommended mitigation protocol to be put into place. So reviewing that and how does that work here? And then also having the discussion, analyzing our past data in terms of lodging occupancy numbers and what is feasible on that front in terms of the phasing in and organic versus putting something like a hard number down. So those are the discussions that have already started, but we have a meeting scheduled for Friday, tomorrow afternoon. And then the restaurant group got together and they have also been meeting separately, you know, or more individually and have the restaurant association. So I think by probably on the later end next week. And I'd love to hear from you all. I know I mentioned kind of maybe we go through the policy committee, but what I'll send you a draft of how I kind of see this working. But then do you want to hear formal presentations from the different industry sectors to for what they propose?
I don't know about that. I'm just going to make one more comment before everybody weighs in on that. The other thing that I've been hearing is from the restaurant industry is that they need a couple of weeks. And talking about what Doug brought up in terms of providing the restaurant opening to our local herd, as Doug likes to say, would make some sense for a couple of weeks in order to be ready for more visitors coming into our community starting around the 1st of June.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think they will bring to the table a proposed timeline is comfortable. And the last call we had, again, Beth joined us, Jason Lacey was on the call, and Carrie Ladger jumped in as well. So it was great to have that, you know, initial dialogue. Answers were being were shared right away, so there wasn't a ton of like just coming up with lists of questions. We were getting answers right away, which is really helpful to move things forward as quickly as possible.
And then one, well, I use this phrase a lot, one last comment, and it's not the last comment.
Until you think of another comment.
Until I think of another one. The one last comment is that the one thing that we all need to continue to recognize is that any kind of a reopening, and I'm supportive of reopening, is going to come at a cost. The idea that we're going to open the lodging and the restaurant industry and everything's just going to be fine and we're going to bring in 5,000 or 10,000 or how many other people from out of town, and that we won't have an increase in incidences of COVID-19 is delusional. So we just have to be honest with ourselves and with the public that we're not kidding ourselves. We're making a choice here that has consequences. So that's my last comment for now. Thank you.
So, and I would agree with that, Tim, is, you know, the whole thing that we're doing right now is risk management, just like the same thing driving down the highway. So, so we have risk management and we're in charge of risk management on behalf of the board of, by being the board of health on behalf of the community. So I'm totally with you. I understand that, you know, but we can't be living in I'm being a little more open here. And again, I think, you know, you're right, Tim. You know, we are living in the world of being the benefactors of our good system that we put in and the immediacy of what we did as well. In fact, we probably wouldn't have had hardly any if we weren't the tourism community that we are in the first place. But at the same point in time, we have to balance our economic and reality here. So, but it is all risk management, and I think that we need to keep all of the factors in mind as we're moving through the risk management discussion. So,
I want to make a couple of comments. So I think, Doug, your points about being open to the idea that we might apply for exemption, be willing to apply for exemptions to the governor if we have a request from industry sectors, if we have a way that we believe we could safely move forward. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I think, again, I said this to Kara this morning, I haven't interpreted anything that the restaurants specifically have shared to be a request for us to make an exemption. And maybe they intended to say that, but that has not been my understanding. And so absent that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that we would just do it, right? So I think a direct question to them would be great. And I know Kara's planning to do that. Is that something you are asking for? Because that, if so, that hasn't been clear. And I think we should be open to that. And I think that's important because, as you said, Doug, I mean, this whole thing is just calculated risk management. And back to Tim's point, it's not that the virus is gone. You know, we didn't get rid of it by staying at home. We just kept people from getting it. It's still out there. It's still going to spread. And our job is to make sure that we are limiting social interaction enough so that we can manage it. It's not that we're preventing anybody from getting sick, but we have to keep it at a level where our hospital capacity, our capacity to do testing and contact tracing keeps it manageable. And so that's where all of this is calculated risk, is what is manageable and how do we do that? And I mean, just to remind us all, is if people continue to wear masks, to do all those things, that to stay home when they're sick, to do the things they're supposed to do, it's going to work, right? Like reopening things is going to work. And so there's multiple messages there. And so I do think we have a subset of our population that is believes that it would be appropriate to just throw the floodgates open and lift all restrictions and not be concerned at all about the public health. And I think the three of us are in agreement that that is not the right approach. And I think we're also in agreement that we do want to move forward as quickly as we can safely do so. And it's just a degree of risk, right? It's how much risk are we willing to tolerate? And I don't know, you know?
Define safe.
Say that again.
Define safe.
Yeah, exactly. And that has to do with risk. I mean, it really does. And I guess the other thing, just to say something a little bit more concrete, I was just looking at a calendar because I was asking myself, how long has it been since we moved into safer at home? And the answer is it's been about a week and a half, right? So we went in on the 27th. It's been about 10 days since then. It makes sense to me that if there was going to be kind of a next phase that we're considering and planning for that's before the end of May, that the end of next week or the 15th or to the 18th would be what we would be looking at, because by then we would have data that would tell us how successful the transition into this safer at home period was. And we would know if we were willing to kind of take the next step and try something else. So I don't know if you guys would agree with that logic, but based on what we know, you know, that kind of 2 to 3 week time frame to evaluate the data and see what happened. If we haven't seen a significant increase in cases by that point, and we want to move forward earlier than the end of the month, that would be the time frame that I think would make sense to be considering. Tim, you're muted, but I see that you're talking.
Karen, I thought I saw you waving your hand. No. Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Okay, well, we've had an awesome discussion so far. Kara, do you feel like you've got the information you need to go back to your groups and have them bring something forward to us. I know that you asked if we needed some kind of a formal presentation. I don't know the answer to that question. Doug, Beth, formal presentation from the groups?
Kara was going to put together kind of a plan for this industry sector reopening concept. And so maybe in that you could propose how that information comes back, and then we could give you some feedback and have some time to think about it. That would be my suggestion.
Got it. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's a good direction. I don't know that I need a formal presentation. I mean, we know how to read, so.
Well, go ahead, Robert.
I would just add, though, for Kara's sake and for this process's sake, you have been very transparent through this whole process of where you get information. So even if you don't get a formal presentation, then that information that the industry is sharing needs to be somehow shared with the public. And I guess my concern is that if you don't have a formal presentation, then people just hear what the industry is proposing without the questions, the clarifying questions that you may ask. So something to consider.
I do think we want to have some kind of public consideration of the information that comes back to us, but the exact format, I think we should probably think through what that looks like. But I agree with you, Robin. It's going to be really important for the public to know what we've been asked and what we're considering and how we make our decisions on that. And it's going to be important for those industries to feel like we've heard what they had to say.
So yeah, also I would hope that we'd kind of have a time frame on it too. So, you know, again, the governor's order goes off, you know, whenever it goes off. I think the end, you know,
27th,
yeah, I think, Doug. 27th, yeah. So 26th. Again, so, you know, hopefully we would have the time in there to have the industry groups come together and have their discussion and provide adequate mitigation to achieve our objectives, and then that we have time, you know, a couple days or something at least, but we don't do it every day as for every different industry. So hopefully we would have, you know, a group of exemption type of requests per industry that we could all put together and be worthwhile before the 20, I mean, you know, so that it's nobody needs to waste our time if we're going to be doing it on the 26th or something. I appreciate it very much, the discussion we had today here, because I want to make sure that it's quite clear that we're open to some type of exemption request based on our industries telling us that they need an exemption. So, but it isn't, I don't want it to be me telling the restaurants should be open right now. Well, no, I don't know that. I don't have a clue. So, but anyhow, enough.
I unfortunately have to pop off for another meeting. Will you please let me know if there's any other direction or thoughts you guys share in the rest of your meeting? Thank you for letting me come in unannounced. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us, Kara. The other thing I think we had a lot of discussion about is just, you know, what we want our message to the community to be about this transition plan. So I don't know, Robin, if you want to try to summarize for us or what, but I think it's clear that people don't fully understand where we're at. And Robin's right, we're not ever going to be able to get to 100% of people understanding where we're at. But if you want to maybe just help us summarize what we think that message needs to be, I think that would be helpful.
I mean, I would like some time to take from my notes, but you know, some of the key things I think Tim outlined, you know, just kind of, you know, we're in a good place now because we took all the precautions early. I think another message is that we are looking at multiple data points, like we've talked about on that diagnostic tool. So not just public health indicators, but also economic indicators that we want to hear from you. We want to hear from the public. And I think what I would like to do is include a survey so we can actually hear from them directly and not just random emails that you get. That our plan is a draft. We drafted something so that it is much easier to comment and to adjust to something that's written than something that is not written. And I think the last one is that, you know, we're, as always, we're working in partnership with the other sectors of the economy. And, you know, we applaud, we thank the partnership we have with the Steamboat Chamber to help us work with the different industries to understand whether exemptions would be necessary and helpful to those industries to move forward as we open up the economy, something like that.
So what I would add to that, Robin, and I think that was a good list, is, and I think that this is the message that has been missing, is, and I liken this to my relationship with my wife. Sometimes I assume that she knows what I'm thinking or that she knows that I care, but sometimes you need to come right out and say it. And I think that that may be what we have failed to do, which is to say to our community, we desperately want to see our economy open back up. We desperately want to see people go back to work. We desperately want to see businesses succeed. And we want to do all of this in a responsible way. And I think we focused so much on being responsible that we've kind of forgotten to extend the message that we really do want to open up. And that's what I see in the tone of the emails that we're getting, which is as if we were taking some pleasure in shutting down businesses, you know, which we think is ridiculous, but people obviously feel that way.
So thanks, Tim. I agree with everything you just said. And one other thing that I've taken really seriously is that I heard from the Lodging Association, and I also heard from the Restaurant Association, and I've heard from others, is that the most devastating thing that could happen to them is if we open up and have to shut everything down again. And so I've taken that feedback really seriously in terms of the importance of opening up in a way that significantly reduces the risk of that happening. And so there's just lots of different considerations, obviously. And you know, how fast is too fast? How slow is too slow? Those are both really hard questions to answer. And I think we're doing the best we can to answer those questions. But that's one piece of feedback we've gotten from these industries that we've also taken seriously, is that having to shut back down again would be more devastating than having to stay closed longer. That is what I have heard them say. And that doesn't mean that we take it lightly, like, oh, just stay closed forever. I don't think any of us think that, but we have to really trust our public health experts on what is the best way to keep that from happening. The other thing I'm wondering, I don't know how we would ever find this out, and this probably just falls in the category of something I should just let go. I feel like maybe there's a rumor that we're planning to ban second homeowners with some kind of public health order, or that we already have, just based on some of what people are saying.
It's the word directive, Beth, in that letter. That word, it was probably the most controversial word. And I, you know, I apologize. I should have, you know, when it all started, I really didn't know where that was coming from, and I didn't pay as much attention. But that word has been interpreted by many people, our own staff, that means directive means that it's, you know, some way legally binding, and that's an order. That I think that second homeowner's letter with that word directive has confused a lot of people.
Okay. There's no shame in backtracking.
Well, you know, the directive,
like, was a wrong message.
But the word directive, I'm not, I understand. And I understand, agree and appreciate that feedback, Robin. The word directive was in reference to what the governor has said about people not going to the mountains and people. So it's not even a local directive, if you will. And I understand you can't, it's hard to fully portray everything. I do think though that the strategy that Tim and I heard conveyed by some of these other counties, that the second homeowners are the first people we want to encourage to come back, it makes sense to me. It's not something I had thought about prior to that, but it makes a lot of sense for the reasons that they shared, which is those people feel like they're a part of our community. They're probably a lot more likely to follow the rules, if you will, to help us with containment. And so I think what we should be thinking about is what is the timeline for sending that message? I would lean toward, kind of the end of this month when we're looking at the idea of relaxing restrictions on short-term lodging. To have kind of a we want you to come back message rather than just now it's okay to come back. While maybe we should have chosen some different language for that letter, I think the sentiment is still true, which is we are discouraging people from coming at this point. That doesn't mean that has to last until the end of May if we don't think it should last till the end of May. It doesn't have to last through the summer if we don't think it should last for the summer. But as of right now, we are still discouraging people from coming. And that was the intent of the letter, was discouraging that. At no point have we banned it or threatened criminal action or anything else. So I don't know what people's thoughts are on timeline and if that's the right strategy to start by welcoming second homeowners back before kind of the broader tourism base. I don't think it's tomorrow, right? But we should talk about when we think it might be.
I don't know, Beth. I mean, maybe it is tomorrow. When we measure the risk of people traveling in and out of our community, our second homeowners represent such a small risk that it makes me wonder why we even would bother discouraging them, especially when we think about who's been the most restrictive county in the state, Gunnison. Who's inviting their second homeowners back? Gunnison.
I would suggest two things. Is one, just because the second homeowner cohort is pretty vocal and influential, is that I wouldn't mind putting something welcoming in the press release we put out today. We can word the timing. And then I know the Board of Health is meeting not until next Wednesday. But in the meantime, either an informal way or what's today, Thursday, Friday, tomorrow, you may want to ask if Carrie or Brian can come to your BCC meeting to just, give their, just let them know, but ask for their input on the second homeowner thing, just if you want to get another perspective.
I think that making a decision to change course today for tomorrow based on a bunch of emails we got in the last 12 hours feels like a knee-jerk reaction that is not well thought out, in my opinion. I would prefer that we have conversation as the Board of Health at our regular meeting next Wednesday, and that if after that time we believe a change of course, which again, this is just a change of course in messaging, right? None of this is regulatory in nature. It's just our message. But I think we could consider maybe mid-May if we felt like, again, that sort of May 15th kind of date. I would not be supportive of making a change today. because nothing has really changed in the last 12 hours, except that somebody is lobbying all these second home or encouraging all these second homeowners to lobby us. I mean, that's all that has changed. And I think it would be sort of a knee jerk reaction to not think this through a little longer.
So you make good points, Beth, and I don't disagree with anything that you said there. I think you're right. It is just how we're communicating something. But I think it's okay. And we're, frankly, I'm doing that right now, which is to publicly admit that we may have missed the mark on the communication, and that we will be reconsidering how we're going to communicate this issue next week. I think that's okay to say out loud.
So the bottom line, nothing has changed anyhow. We didn't have a opportunity to rule these guys out of here anyhow. So, you know, they were going to come in whether they liked it or not, whether we liked it or not. So I don't know. We're getting kind of hung up on the message here. And you know, and yeah, maybe they got the message, but you know, we didn't do anything right. Didn't do anything wrong. I don't know what, you know, so yeah, that maybe the directive, as Robin says, you know, that word, you know, I personally agree with what Tim said too. You know, these people with the second homes, they're, you know, they own this community too. So, and it's not like they're transients and moving in and out. So I don't know that I'm the least on communication. So I try to figure out how we get that, you know, and I don't know that we need to get anything out of it. We just need to quit saying maybe the wrong things too. So I think that might've been the bigger thing, is we could have been better off just saying, hey, we're going to live with the governor's order and that rest. But I think we need to get past the governor's order too. And we need to be looking out for our own community and what our own community could do based on what our own data is doing too. So I'm supportive of whatever we can do here and figure it out.
Well, you're good with waiting till Wednesday to do anything different then.
So I don't know what magic day Wednesday is, other than it's a public health meeting. So, you know, and, you know, we get Dr. Harrington and Carrie Ladro's, you know, acknowledgement. We already know what those risk factors are. And so, we want to hear from them as well. But, you know, I think we've all become pretty well public health experts here as well. So
everybody's become a public health expert. I will continue to say that I am not a public health expert. I am. So I just want to remind you guys that the genesis of that letter, and again, I don't think it's useful to debate whether we use the right words or not in the letter, but the genesis was that we had a request to write a letter to second homeowners stating whether they should consider safer at home to mean they should come back or not. And we agreed that we were still discouraging them from coming back, in part based on the governor's comments that people should be recreating and staying close to home. We reviewed that letter. Our legal staff reviewed that letter. Our public health folks reviewed that letter. It went through probably 5 or 6 iterations before we sent it out. It wasn't just a, hey, we don't like second homeowners, let's send out this letter. It was specifically requested that we provide some clarification on whether they were still discouraged from coming, and that's what we did. And so I guess my thought, Doug, not that Wednesday is a magic date, but that if we are changing our opinion from discouraging second homeowners from coming to encouraging them, or at least not discouraging them, that should be after discussion with our public health folks. And while I appreciate what you're saying, that we've all learned a lot about public health, they are still the public health experts, and we should recognize that. And I guess the other thing, just a reminder about that letter, is that we did include two things. We included, you are still discouraged from coming, please stay where you live, as well as, if you decide to come here, here's how you can help keep our community safe. And that, those are the two things we included in that letter.
We demonstrated the danger of clarifying.
I guess so, but we are where we are. And I guess what I would suggest still is that let's have a discussion next week after this settles a little bit about the real question is, are we still discouraging second homeowners from coming or not? And if not, then that's fine. But I would just encourage us maybe to let this settle a little bit, not make a really, what feels to me, impulsive kind of reaction to people not liking what we said. You know, we said that we're still discouraging second homeowners from coming. And I think we should just give it some more thought before we make a change in that message. And that thought should include some input from public health.
Beth, I guess my comment, I'm totally good with that, you know, and I really appreciate the conversation today. I think the biggest thing that is achieved in my mind here today is that we're willing and open to having some further conversation about exemption plans and the rest. And we don't need to live by the governor. And you said it, you know, and I've said it all along, the governor's plan is based on 64 counties. And so, you know, we can do something better, different. And we don't need to be locked into that, but we need help from those industries that aren't thinking they're not being heard, and we need to hear from them and in some constructive manner. So I'm totally good. And that was a great achievement for me today, is just having that acknowledgement that we're open for conversation.
Agreed.
Yep, I agree.
All right. Mm-hmm. We are doing what we do best, which is to take a subject and just beat it damn near to death. Is there another subject that we want to work over here?
Tim, some people call it thoughtful consideration.
That's another way to refer to it.
I don't think I have anything else. When I talked to Mark yesterday, and he mentioned that he and Christy had been talking about weddings a little bit. I know we don't want to get way into the weeds on that, but he could probably just tell us where we're at in terms of having that conversation. But other than that, I don't have anything specific. I'm making my kid a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but I am listening and will jump in as needed.
Okay.
So the other thing, you know, I wanted to hear from legal on the weddings thing as well. So Linnea is on here, and I think Eric is on here too. So, but anyhow, I just, you know, the request, you know, so I appreciate that. And then I want to talk about the policy committee after we talk about weddings.
I think you're up, Mark.
So commissioners, thanks. Thanks to Beth for that intro. Yes, indeed, with the recent correspondence that you've had relative to the weddings topic, it's allowed me an opportunity to talk with Christy a little bit more, kind of get a background in terms of where you've been and where that conditional use process has been. So what I've asked Christy to do is to reach out to the individuals that have contacted you, or at least the folks that have primarily been more involved in the wedding venue activities, and ask them, probably most importantly, what are you seeking specifically, so that we've got a little better idea what the request is, because I think we're getting, again, a different mix of messages. So with that in mind, then we're prepared to come back to you and talk a little bit more about what maybe some changes may be in the future. I appreciate Doug's comments. If you feel like you had identified, you with the help of the Planning Commission, a carrying capacity, for lack of a better term, for those events, we need to be very mindful and very vigilant about tipping that balance because of obviously the input from some neighbors and nearby residents. So that's part of the conversation we'll have with them. One of the things more than likely that would happen is it would go back before the Planning Commission for that discussion if there could be potential changes, i.e. again, into the carrying capacity. And if necessary, then again, a check back with the Board of County Commissioners. So again, as you mentioned, Tim, both Eric and Linnea might be on the line. If they want to weigh in with their comments, I'd certainly invite those.
I was just going to wait until we got a proposal from Christy. My only thoughts at the moment are we have to follow our regulatory scheme. And if these are, I would say, substantial modifications to permits, they're going to have to go through a process individually, at least right now. You can't simply do them en masse the way our regulations are.
Eric, thanks. That's why we are talking about walking back through the appropriate process and not certainly doing anything administratively. We would not touch that, making sure that again we get all the information, all the facts and specific to the requests, and then begin to talk about just exactly what would the process be to go ahead and move that forward.
At the risk of making a snide comment, I certainly wouldn't want to do anything to impact their agricultural operations with too many other activities going on. So, and I totally agree with our legal advice. We have a process and we need to see exactly what's being requested and then go back through that process. Or alternatively, we could just get rid of our zoning regulations and just let everybody do what they want to do. So
question for Eric, and I'm just being facetious here a little bit, but so isn't this covered by our emergency declaration? We could just do whatever we want to do, and oh, it's good. It's an emergency.
No. No, I don't think so.
That's the most straightforward legal advice we've ever gotten. I would just make two comments.
It was a greatly phrased question, and he made it so easy.
I just make two comments on the wedding thing. I haven't gone through one of these CUP hearings, so I'm sensitive to the fact that the neighbors often have concerns, and I think we should be respectful of that. And I think we have to just recognize the the kind of reality of this situation, which is that, you know, people book these weddings 12 or 18 or 24 months in advance. And if they have to cancel it, they and the business owner are trying to figure out what to do. And so I think it's worth asking the question, is there a way to recognize the unprecedented situation and help out? And if the answer is no, then the answer is no. But I think we should recognize the challenge and ask the question about whether there's anything to be done.
I have a question for Doug. Doug, refresh my memory. Aren't these kinds of special use permits that are allowing the wedding venues and some of the other types of activities supposed to be a minority supporting operation to the primary agricultural operation?
Yeah, they're supposed to be, but you know, again, so they're supposed to be, but you know, I think I had that in one of my emails, and so I'm sure we're complaining about, you know, so you know, it was ag class, just like you said, there was the ag classification on this thing where their primary income ends up being the wedding venues as well. So we don't make the, you know, that's where the two sets of rules don't actually coincide and they don't live in the same building, even the sets are two sets of rules. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. I just wanted to make sure that was the case. Thank you. All right. Mark, do you have anything else for us today?
I do not, Tim. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I still wanted to bring up the policy committee discussion, okay, if we could. And so Robin, thank you. Robin had worked up that letter or something or whatever, you know, a memo. And yeah, I think we really need to come up with a real, you know, a directive or a letter from the commissioners, Board of Health, to and create this, officially create this policy committee, which kind of didn't and wasn't intact and the rest, and how we can do that, who needs to be on it, and officially appoint those people or something, whatever. It seems like this thing, the way things are heading right now, this thing is going to be in transition itself, and it's going to be here for a little while longer. So I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on, but I thought that the memo that, the letter that Robin started out with was a great start. It came up with, from the commissioners, what the mission would be, what the objectives were would be. And Robin's very good, and I appreciate it very much. She's good on objectives and goals and identifying those, and that we come up with those for the policy and then bring them back, have the policy committee bring them back to us. So we're going to be meeting again next Tuesday. We're championing them, but I think they're kind of missionless without having a defined objective that the commissioners want to see out of that come. So I just want to, that we need to be driving that ship. Don't everybody speak at once.
Well, I thought that I liked Robin's, I'm just trying to remember the memo, but I remember reading it and agreeing with what was in there. And I've just been thinking of the importance of that policy committee is us working in collaboration with the other elected officials in the county, as well as I think representatives from business especially, but maybe there are some others that are important. But I think it's really about a collaborative environment. And I mean, you know, we're only the three of us and we see what we see and we hear what we hear, but there's value in those folks who are representing each of our municipalities to be able to give us some feedback on decisions. And we also need their buy-in on our decision making, you know, and so I think that's part of that. And that's what I see as the importance of that group, is we need them, we need to all be on the same team with them. And so it's engaging with them and asking for their feedback, and considering their feedback in our decision making, in order for us to all be working together and for us to have that input that we maybe might not hear otherwise. So, and I think Robin's memo conveyed that, but that's kind of been my thought about the importance of that policy.
So, and I would agree with that, Beth, too, and I thank you. And you know, I hate to put it down so crassly as it was in the letter, that, you know, the political backing. We actually need that political backing, whether you like it or not. You know, that's why it needs to be a broad-based group that kind of represents our community. And so, again, I liked it as well. So, yeah, I'm
good with the direction. I don't have a problem with any of that.
So if you all can, do you want me to email it to you again so it's at the top of your email boxes? And
I need one more.
I know. You've gotten so many constituent emails in the last 24 hours.
I sent some comments.
Yes, I got those.
Just making sure.
And I think the only person I didn't hear from was you, Tim.
Send it to me again.
Okay. All right.
So the question I'd have back to Tim and Beth here is do we want to actually have identified people, or do we identify sectors? Do we want to appoint these people on behalf of us? Are we okay with a more relaxed type of environment and the rest? And so I just want to, and again, I'm just asking questions because I think it provides a great quality atmosphere back to our constituents. So
sorry, Robin, go ahead.
I just wanted to if I can just add, and again, I am not, I have not read in great deal the National Incident Management Strategy from the federal government. So from what I know, and Mo may have some input, there always is a policy group when an emergency, because it's not just providing recommendations, but it's also providing resources. So I think what we're doing now is that as we go out of this EOC mode into a recovery mode, and then also all the other things that you were talking about beforehand, about, you know, do we go for exemptions, and open up sooner, getting the political buy-in is important. So I would say is that you have a great opportunity to say, you know, we wanted to outline what we really valued what the policy group did during the Emergency Operations Center, but now we're in phase two. Now we go to, you know, our road to recovery, and we still value your input, and we wanted to clarify what that is. So, you know, we can say it in the memo, but just so you know that usually the policy group is part of the EOC in the National Incident Management Strategy. I'm learning all this stuff. So that's why you have it. So you allocate resources. And so I think now in the next phase, it's less about allocating resources and more about getting buy-in and getting their recommendations and advice.
So I just quickly Googled the NIMS policy group, and I just copied and pasted what's into the chat box so you guys can read it. But it says MAC, which I never knew what MAC stood for, but MAC stands for Multi-Agency Coordination Group. And it says it consists of agency administrators or executives from organizations or their designees. They provide policy guidance to personnel, support resource prioritization and allocation, and enable decision-making among elected and appointed officials and senior executives in other organizations, as well as those directly responsible for incident management. That's a lot of like jargony gobbledygook, but I think it reflects exactly what we were just talking about, and maybe referring back to that NIMS structure is helpful in clarifying what the role is. The other thing I was gonna say is that it seems like maybe twice now the policy group has gotten like diluted with people who maybe don't really belong on the policy group, or they just really want to be involved. And I think the first time was kind of the lack of clarity, which agencies, if you will, needed to be involved. And then the second time was it kind of got meshed with these people who were responsible for the transition to normal planning. I think it's really important to maintain the integrity of who is supposed to be a part of that group and not let it get watered down by anybody and everybody who wants to participate, because that's when it loses focus and that's when it loses impact, in my opinion. And so to Don's point, not necessarily appointing people, but listing which agencies need to be represented on that group. And I think it's always going to be up to those agencies to determine who their designee is. But I haven't participated, so I don't know, but it seems that the groups that have been identified previously in the policy group 2.0 are still the right groups, which I think was our the chamber to represent businesses, each of the municipalities, and then the hospital, and then public health being part of that kind of, they are part of the county, but as a separate representative there. I don't know, are there other, is that still the right makeup or not? And is there something that worked or didn't work other than the kind of like, again, muddying of the water, including the people who weren't those groups?
The only thing that I would say, and I'm a little biased because this is my background, is that adding somebody like Kate Novak from United Way, from the nonprofit community, is just has, we added her to our JIC that we do with the public information officers. And that just represents another part of the community, whether it's vulnerable populations or, you know, we have so many nonprofits in this town. And their perspective. So I have to say there's been way more coordination between United Way and the Mountain and the hospital since we've done that. So that would be the only sector that I don't think is represented well in that policy group. We have no one that represents the nonprofits. So that would be my, again, I'm a little biased on that, but they are a big part of our community. I just sent you the list of all the policy members. Just so you have it. And, you know, we have the political leaders from our towns. We don't have anybody from Clark per se or North Route. And then we have the chamber and the hospital as far as the business sector.
Clark is unincorporated. So, that's why they don't. And so like Phippsburg or
Milner.
Yeah.
Milner. So, you know, again, as Robin was saying too, and again, I don't know, we're heading into the second phase, and I just think it would be good that if we had identified the groups, we don't need to appoint people, just as you said, Beth, you know, we could identify groups, of the interests that we want to have on there, and then we would just create that thing, and, you know, and again, we'll mirror off of the multi-agency coordination group that you talked about, but it's really going to be an advisory group to get the political backing that we're having and to bounce off from our citizen group, some type of personnel of people that can vet what we're talking about and the things that we're doing and maybe, you know, provide us some recommendations as well. I will tell you that one of the things, especially with this event, we missed mental health. Mental health is not in here. So had that discussion yesterday during our policy meeting on Tuesday as well. We're talking about economic health, we're talking about public health, and we're talking about mental health, and we're talking about contributions and those kind of things, as well as then the municipalities and then being the backbone of what we're doing as public health. So I don't know. So I don't know. And again, right now, this is our boat. We're building this boat for us. So I think we ought to figure out, you know, kind of, and maybe I'm, you know, maybe the thing's going to go away. We really don't want it in the first place. But, you know, even the business part of it, you know, the business part of it could be continue to be Kara Stoller and the rest. But at the same point in time, then she can spin off and have her own sets of groups that make recommendations to the policy group too, that could work. So anyhow, I just wanted to have some more conversation on that.
What I could do, commissioners, if it's easier for you just from this conversation, I sent you the policy group list as it exists. So why don't I take the comments that I've gotten from you so far and add it to the memo. And then what I think I'm gonna do is I'll add a section of the memo about membership, about, you know, who we think should be, you know, who's on, but maybe who we think we should add, like mental health and maybe some others, and give you version two so you can look at, and then maybe we have the goal of trying to get this to the policy group before Tuesday of next week. Does that work? Yes? Okay.
Yes. I just, I'm still reading this FEMA stuff. There's about a one-page summary of what a MAC group usually does. And again, I think it helps to give some language to what we're talking about. And so rather than me just taking a look, I may already have looked at this, but I think it's helpful. And
yeah, that's it. No, yeah, I'm going to add it so I can talk about phase one, phase two.
That sounds good. And I think circling back to really, we need to have a good way of kind of having a team approach with the other policy leaders across the county so that we're all on the same page about where we need to go. And that's both getting input from them and getting buy-in from them on decision-making. I mean, to me, that's the primary thing. But to your point, Doug, there are other considerations besides just the political leaders too. Thinking about what the right structure for getting that input is, whether it's mental health, whether it's care, doing outreach to certain sectors of the business community. But I also think we should just identify where we hear directly from those people too. You know, we talked about earlier that presentations from the business sectors, et cetera, and from mental health and from nonprofits and whatever it is. So I think just coming up with the right structure is productive.
So, you know, the other thing, I mean, you know, United Way would be a good representative too, but so, you know, we still have the conversation about vulnerable populations as well. And, you know, whether it's seniors, you know, the Council on Aging and those type of people as well. And so I don't know, I'm open for any discussion, but I think, you know, I think it go back to Robin's conversation. We need to figure out what the mission needs to be and the objective out of these guys. And then we can figure out how we need to staff it. And Robin, I'm learning, I'm good. You know, cowboy can learn.
You're doing great. That's what you wanted during strategic planning. So I'm just trying to model best practices.
Very good. A reminder, I'm getting my face zapped tomorrow, so I won't be around. What I'm thinking you guys could do tomorrow while I'm gone is figure out a joint response to all these emails and take care of that for me while I'm gone. And I will tell you, frankly, I am not responding to any of the disrespectful emails that I've gotten. Some of the stuff, the tone of it has been in a place that it does not deserve a response. And that's going to continue to be my personal policy. Unless, well, never mind, just I'm not going to respond.
I think I would ask, you know, Robin, sorry, I heard from you guys that I'm cutting out a little bit, and I don't know if there's anything I can do about that. So if you don't hear something, just let me know. You know, yesterday we talked about the importance of coordinating communications and not having five responses, et cetera. I do think that we're getting a lot of emails that are of the nature, rescind your public health orders, you know, open up the county. I don't know. I think, you know, we could just, I think we have a couple of thoughts that we could do. One is we could just take those comments under consideration, which I think we are. But is there a reason to provide a consistent response, especially where it feels like maybe people have the wrong information, you know, just clarifying that currently the county is under the governor's safer at home order, with the exception that we have closed short-term lodging, and just providing clarification, but that may just make people mad. And it may be better to just take those comments under consideration and not attempt to respond to every one of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to respond to any of them, so it's fine. I responded to one, maybe. So, and he's a friend, so I responded. But anyhow, So it brings up a second point that I think we need to talk about here too. So where are we at with the call line? We still haven't determined that, and maybe Robin's laughing because we still, I don't know. I wouldn't want to put her in the class of my mind, but anyhow, so it's a less than great mind, but anyhow.
Well, I could give you an update more tomorrow. Scott Coleman, Robert and I are meeting today. I think the biggest challenge that I see is that I want to meet the goals of having a consistent response and looking at the, Beth has been sharing some of the emails that she's gotten today, and I'd be curious what Mark thinks. I think it's always good to respond, you know, even if it's an automated response or the same, not say automated, but the same response. And so we could draft, Cheryl and I could draft a response that kind of, you know, maybe doesn't go into great detail. And, you know, maybe Eric and Linnea take a look at it just from the legal perspective from all these constituents. But I think the biggest challenge that we have is that we don't really have a constituency relations department in the county. So having the call line takes a lot of staff time. If the JIC, you know, if we start taking that on, then we have less time to be proactive to do the things that we do. So I'm more inclined that we try to make our website more robust, have some standard responses, whether it's, 5, 6, 7 responses to different types of emails. And that we figure out maybe there's way to management. And, you know, Mark, you want to add in some of the ideas you had of what other counties have done on this effort? Because it's a really resource intensive process of responding to emails and having a call line.
It is, Robin. And so a couple of the comments that you made, let me highlight those. That we've got some standard responses that we provide to any community members, constituents that would write us a note that would fall into what I would almost call a category. And because I think a lot of them are starting to fall into those various categories, those silos. Secondly, Robin has mentioned before, and I want to reemphasize this. If we can have a medium by which we can provide FAQs, I think a lot of times when people contact us, the information is already there and is already readily accessible. We just need to put it in a spot where it's easily observable for them. Something they can say, oh, and Robin and I talked about this, you know, United Airlines is a good example. You have all these questions about, you know, how, you know, anything with your ticketing or your luggage. You go to the FAQs, a lot of times those are, you know, you wipe out half of the questions by having those prepared. The other thing that I think is important at this point in time is that we do talk about a transition, that we've got an email platform, which is something that's going to be our primary response, as opposed to, again, staffing a call center around the clock. Because I think that's what we've talked about with the transitional phase. We're starting to go to that next level, that next plateau. And to get everybody accustomed to that, to say, if you've got something that you want to have an immediate response to, please put it in the form of this email response. We'll get back to you. But to just lessen that load in terms of where we've been on staffing, because we've got to be able to prioritize that going forward. But I'll just finish with, again, Mo, Robin, Scott, myself, and others have been involved in this conversation and discussion dialogue. We want to come back to you with what we think the new procedure, the new protocol will be going forward. I think it's something that we're overdue to do.
Sounds good. Anything else for the good of the order here today, or are we meeting on Saturday, by the way?
Wasn't that enough, Tim? Do we have to talk about any more? No, I'm just joking. I was thinking about that same question. I don't know if we need to continue meeting on Saturdays, but I would say that I feel like the space. So being able to Saturday morning is nice because it's quieter and it's easy for us to just have a little bit of these conversations that maybe aren't as important, but that we don't get to during the week. So I'm okay continuing to meet on Saturday, but I would also be okay taking Saturday off the agenda if it's problematic for others.
No, I think it might not be a bad idea. It may be too long to go between Friday and Monday, just like you said, given the pace of events, and we can make it a short meeting. I'm going to be locked in a dark room all weekend anyway, so it's no problem for me to meet on Saturday. So I would suggest we go ahead and do it at the regular.
Cows don't know what day it is, so.
Recognizing that it may be a very short meeting, but that's fine. Let's go ahead and go through the motions.
So, yeah, I'm all right with that. So I'll be socially distancing, branding, and hauling cows on Saturday and Sunday. So, but I'll be able to make the meeting, and we'll work around that. So, yeah, that's good. Thank you.
So, Kendra, are you going to make sure Deanna gets that posted? A Saturday meeting posted?
It's already been done. There were no extra items that needed any approval. So just the standard basic has been posted.
Okay, great. Anything else for the good of the order?
I think we didn't resolve the question about, obviously we got a flood of emails today that are all along the same lines. And I heard Robin say she thought we should respond. And I don't know where we're at on that.
Well, I don't feel the need that you have to respond within 5 hours. So to me, my priorities today are to get a press release out with the transition thing that we have and get the messaging out. And then I think the policy meeting. So what we could do is just draft a standard email of like what Mark was talking about that comes in, you know, that we can send to lots of them. If you forward me what they are, actually Mark and I both what they are, so we can see what they are. I would like to create like a stable of like, you know, 5 or 10 emails that responds, and then whether you hit send or Kendra hits send, you know, I don't know. But I think that's what we should do, but I don't think it has to be done today.
So will you give us your, I have a feeling that some people are going to be more mad about that than no response at all. I'm not opposed to it. I guess I'd just like your thoughts on that. I know that some people who are frustrated, angry, et cetera, might be more frustrated and angry by sort of a canned response than by if we just took their comments under consideration and didn't respond. I guess I'd just like your thought on that.
Politics is hard, right? And, I spent the last 8 years doing the school stuff, you know, around whether we build a new school or not in this community. And, you know, you can, you probably know the people, there are like 5 individuals that always complain no matter what you say. And then there's others that, you know, don't really speak up, but, you know, they think stuff and they may be influential in their spheres of influence. So I guess I just come from the old adage, and I talked to my husband about this because he was the legislative director for Senator Daschle for 10 years, is that, you know, just even when people were upset, the rule was you always respond to a constituent. They may not always like what you have to say, but at least you're being responsive. So yes, there may be some people are going to be mad, but they're going to be mad anyway. So I guess it just really depends on, you know, what kind of elected official, you know, how you guys want to do this. And you may want to approach this individually. Mark has way more experience working with county officials than I do. I've been working with federal officials that have a lot more staff and resources to do this kind of thing. But I still think, you know, even if it's a standard response, you can make it look like it's not a standard response.
So I've got a comment about this. I know how to respond or not respond, as the case may be, to the angry, disrespectful emails. I don't have a problem with that. I know how to do that. I think the bigger problem for us has been when we've been asked to interpret what the public health orders mean or don't mean. And Beth pointed out that that's a problem if we're providing three or four different responses. So what I'm going to do with my email inbox today, I'll take care of the disrespectful people on my own. I don't need any help with that. But if there are these specific requests for interpretation, I think I'm going to forward them to you and Mark. And if you can provide me some advice on how to respond to those, unless it's a black and white answer that I really know the answer to. But I've gotten two or three of them that have been a little bit confusing, and I have not wanted to give bad information out. So I'll send those to you. I could use some help with that. I'll take care of the rest of the people myself.
Great, and I would just like to just add, you know, for Eric and Linnea, you know, they're the legal experts. From what I'm hearing from what they say all the time is that we're not the interpreters of the law, that we state what the law is, and then you know, they have to do the right thing. You know, tell me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, then I don't need any help. I can do that.
But Eric, Linnea, is that correct?
They've lost interest, and who could blame them?
I always wait for Eric. He must have fallen asleep. Oh, there he is.
No, I always have to pull my phone out of my pocket and go through those. Of course, courts are in charge of interpreting law. What I think what the struggle is people wanting to have an answer, an interpretation of either our orders or the state's orders. And that's where we refer them to the FAQs. And if there's no, and then the facts will change when they don't like the answer. And then that's where you just have to say, just follow the law, follow the order. And if you don't, well, you know, the court will interpret it for us or for you when all is said and done. The problem is that's easy for me to say. I'm not an elected official. So I understand that. To my comment to you, to your email earlier, I think the responses are fairly easy. And if they're wanting to know an answer that's in regards to the orders, you refer them to the FAQs. They're pretty extensive at this point. If they're complaining about what you're doing, you thank them for taking the time to let you know about it. The one that you got, that you forwarded to me, was disrespectful. You don't have to address that part. That's an individual who I wouldn't pick up a phone to talk to. I might say to them, thank you. Please submit your comments in writing to me, and I'll consider them.
Thank you, Eric. Good advice.
So I hate to beat a dead horse on this, but I think what I'm hearing is there should be some response. We have a long list of emails today that came to all three of us. And I don't think we're saying that each of us individually should respond. I have been pretty much responding when people do that, and that's fine. I'm happy to continue to do that. I think that y'all recognize that my ability to put together a diplomatic and judicious response is probably the strongest, and I'm fine with that. It also puts me in the firing line, so I get that. If you guys want me to do that, I'm happy to go through and do it. They'll probably all look pretty similar, which is here's some clarification on where we stand with our public health orders, and thank you for your comments. We are anxious to reopen things as quickly as we can safely do so. And I can go through and send those emails and obviously CC you guys. Would you like me to do that?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, that's fine.
I do think it's unfair to put you on the firing line, and I think that we've allowed that to happen. So I think I'll be...
I'm the only one who's not running for re-election this year, so...
Well, that's fine. That's beside the point.
I know, I'm joking.
You know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and start responding. I'm going to keep my responses pretty simple and straightforward. I'll make sure that I don't respond in a way that you guys might think is inappropriate, and you can respond as well, and Doug can respond as well. Let's share the burden, and I think Eric has given me the advice that I need, which is I'm not going to spend time interpreting what the rules say. I will direct those people to the FAQs and the end of the orders and say something, unless there's some really obvious correction of misinformation that needs to take place. So
Tim, I drafted one for you of one of your more robust. But I did exactly what Eric said, you know, thank you for your comments, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think it would be helpful for Mark and I, for all three of you, to, you know, maybe BCC us, so that we just have it in that stable. And then, maybe Mark and I can work together, with Kendra, to kind of come up with some standard responses that you have, you know, you just have in your, that you can use whenever you want.
That'd be great. Send it on. I'll I appreciate that level of support, but
I'll be a bit. Yeah, so I would appreciate, you know, you guys, and again, so wordsmithing is not my forte, and I think the comments end up being way too kind for what I think, and so I would have a hard time putting it into words that were probably semblance of nice, and so... yeah, if you guys have some, you know, some draft comments or something that I, you know, Beth, you've done a great job. And yeah, I don't think it's our intention to put you in the firing line either. So, I mean, I think what you said has been semblance of what I believe as well. So I think we've been on the same page here. But I have a hard time responding with something that's cohesive and understandable. So yeah, I'm all good. But we do need to be consistent to the three of us in our responses to how we're doing. So I appreciate all the discussion here.
So I'll just to clarify, I have no concerns about being in the firing line. It has not caused any problems for me. I think people are clear that we are speaking from one voice. I mean, other than folks writing Tim and telling them he should scold me for my stepping out of line. But you know, that's a little, it's just patriarchy. I'll be totally honest. It hasn't been a problem at all, quite frankly. And I don't, it doesn't bother me. And I don't actually feel like I've gotten much scrutiny. To the contrary, I feel like I've gotten a lot of thank you for, you know, being responsive, and thank you for answering our questions. I mean, the people who are mad, and they're not mad at me, and they're mad. They're just mad.
Nobody's yet suggested that you should disappear from the face of the earth.
I have not received anything with those words quite yet. I'm sure I will.
Good. All right. Well, I think we have a kind of a plan, so let's kind of move forward with it.
Sounds good.
Anything else?
I think Eric was trying to say something, but then he muted himself again. So I don't know, maybe he doesn't want to say something.
Oh, I was just going to remind Doug about probably the funniest email I ever read that he authored.
Oh, his, God. His response. Remind me, I remember that. That was awesome.
His response was pretty simple. Dear Stuart, you are full of shit. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I misquoted. Darn it. He said, Dear Stuart, you are dumbass shit.
All right, Robin, you might include that in your actual responses.
Got it.
Mark is indicating that we should not do that. Mark's astute advice, avoid telling people they're dumb. Fair enough.
All right, I'm going to go eat lunch. I'm hungry. I will see you guys on Saturday. Enjoy yourselves tomorrow without me.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.